Over the past few weeks, the Supreme Court has handed down closely watched rulings in several cases, ending the constitutional right to an abortion, expanding the right to carry guns, and letting a football coach pray on the field. All of these fall under the conservative judicial school known as originalism. What is it, and how has it influenced the current conservative Supreme Court? We have Professor Noah Feldman on the line. He's law professor at Harvard. Noah, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we don't have an hour here, but briefly, what is originalism?
Originalism is the idea that in interpreting the meaning of the Constitution, the courts should look to what the people who ratified the Constitution in the relevant moment believed the document to mean, and should then decide cases in keeping not with what that document has come to mean over time through development and evolution, not in the light of moral values that we hold today that nobody held back when it was ratified, but rather through the lens of what the folks believed back in the day. So that's the core idea of originalism. And I should just, full disclosure, say I am not an originalist. Indeed, I don't agree with originalism, but I'm trying to give you the most objective definition that I can.
Yes. No, thank you. Understand. And we will kind of get into that. But just kind of on understanding this, where did it come from, I guess? How do we understand originalism still being a worldview, a theory today?
Originalism was not the theory, it's important to note, of the people who originally drafted the Constitution. In fact, that's one of the weird things about it. You can say with great certainty, I wrote a book about James Madison, that he was not a constitutional originalist, even though he was the principal draftsman of the Constitution. So originalism is a modern idea. And it came into being late 1930s and early 1940s when a justice called Hugo Black, who was very disturbed that the Supreme Court, at that time a conservative Supreme Court, had gone too far in inventing rights, in that case, a right to the liberty of contract. And so Justice Black said, we want to avoid that kind of judicial overreach. How do we avoid that? If we limit our interpretation of the rights in the Constitution to those that were imagined to exist when the document was ratified, we won't have all kinds of new rights that, in his instance, in his case, were conservative rights that he didn't like. So originalism was actually born, surprisingly enough, as a liberal doctrine. Then it was reborn as a conservative doctrine, starting in the 1970s and then flourishing in the 1980s when Justice Antonin Scalia was the leader of the conservative wing of the Supreme Court. And Justice Scalia pushed the argument very hard that it was not legitimate for the justices to interpret the Constitution in light of changing values, because that would give too much discretion to the judges. He said, if you want to take that discretion away, you should limit the interpretation of the Constitution to what people meant when the Constitution was ratified.
And of course, Justice Scalia is no longer with us. In this Supreme Court, let's talk about the application of originalism in this year's rulings. Say Dobbs versus Jackson, the abortion case that overturned Roe v. Wade. How does that argument show up in the majority ruling?
The way the conservative majority did it in the Dobbs case was to say that the way we know what rights are encompassed by the 14th Amendment's protection of life, liberty, and property is not to say how have those rights evolved over time in the light of our national experience and values, but rather to ask what were those values as applied to real cases in 1868, when the 14th Amendment was ratified after the Civil War. And the Dobbs Court said that in 1868, a good number of states had prohibitions on abortion, and therefore there was no fundamental right to abortion understood to be included in the 14th Amendment's guarantee of liberty, and that therefore Roe v. Wade, which said that we should find our liberty interest and a privacy interest in the Constitution, was wrong. And so that's the core logic of the Dobbs decision, that whatever rights you had in 1868, you should still have now under the 14th Amendment. But if it was not a right then, it's not a right today. And as you can hear, that's a pretty shocking doctrine from the standpoint of lots of rights that we enjoy today that were not enjoyed in 1868. And it's also really shocking because, as the dissenters pointed out, the liberal dissenters pointed out, Women were not included among the people who ratified the Constitution in 1868 at all. Women didn't even have the vote at the time. So women's rights over their own bodies are now being adjudicated in the light of a decision made at a time when women were not considered part of the body politic.
Well, now you have teased at this, but maybe if I can ask you to kind of fill it out, a counter argument I gather is that the Constitution is a living document that evolves to expand liberty, to expand equality. Talk a little bit more about that.
The basic case against originalism is, number one, it's self-contradictory because the original framers were not originalists. Number two, you can't do originalism objectively. The idea that originalist interpretation of the Constitution will limit what judges can do, which was Justice Scalia's idea, is just false because history is subjective. It involves judgments and interpretation, and especially when that history is all about drawing analogies between the past and the present. So the promise of originalism that would limit judicial review is false. Last but not least, even if you could do it, it would be undesirable to do it. It would be bad to do it because we should not be governed today by the dead hand of the past. We should not be governed by decisions that were made 150 or 200 plus years ago by a group of people who don't match us in our interests, in our values, in our beliefs, or our composition. It's a crazy way to run a country.
You've mentioned other rights that Americans enjoy today that may be endangered because under originalism, certain marriage rights, sexual partners. What do you worry about as far as potential future cases that might come to the court?
I'm worried about all of them. So if you were to apply the rigorous logic of originalism that the court relied on in Dobbs, the right to contraception, which came before the right to abortion, was created using the same structures and logic as the right to abortion. Ditto for the right to have sex with the sexual partner of your choice, of the gender that you choose. Ditto for the right to gay marriage. All of these rights were decided by the Supreme Court using logic closely analogous to the logic that was overturned by the Supreme Court in the Dobbs decision. So if you follow that logic, all of those rights are potentially up for grabs. Now, it's important to note, so as not to spread inappropriate panic, I mean, there's appropriate panic and there's inappropriate panic, that Justice Brett Kavanaugh, in his separate concurrence, emphasized that he does not think those rights should be revisited. And the majority said that it, on the surface at least, that it didn't think those rights should be revisited. But Justice Clarence Thomas, in his concurrence, said all these rights should be revisited and gotten rid of if they don't meet original interpretation, which they don't. And in the dissent, the dissenters said, listen, we're worried about Justice Thomas, and we're worried about the fact that when a Supreme Court opinion is decided, it has a certain logic to it. And once that logic is in play, you can't just promise, don't worry, we're not revisiting those other rights because abortion is unique. You can't keep a promise like that, even if you mean it when you make it.
Well, the abortion case, right, came from a state law that was challenged and made its way up to the Supreme Court. So could this happen again? That is, despite what Justice Kavanaugh says, despite what Justice Alito wrote, that other states could pass certain laws, perhaps with the intention of bringing it up to the Supreme Court, and then suddenly these promises are put to a test.
Absolutely. So what we know with a high degree of certainty is that conservative state legislatures are going to pass laws that reverse other rights in the same way that the legislatures here passed laws that violated abortion rights that then existed, and then they were rewarded when the Supreme Court overturned abortion rights. Similarly, they're going to pass laws that limit the right to marriage, that may potentially limit contraception in certain ways. And while we wait for the Supreme Court to say, no, the rights you have, you still have, the rights of everyone are going to be in question. So we're going to enter a period potentially of significant uncertainty, even if the Supreme Court does do the right thing in the end. And of course, there is always the possibility that in the course of doing that, they won't do the right thing. They might reverse such rights, or they might limit them, or they might just rewrite the landmark cases like the Obergefell case in a way that weakens the rights that were created there, or that takes away some of the core rationale.
The same-sex marriage case.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, Professor, you have taken us to the men who ratified the Constitution. You've taken us to originalism in the early 20th century. How will history look back on this Supreme Court and its rulings this year?
What's just happened in the last 10 days is a sea change in modern constitutional law. And here's why. Since the end of World War II, the Supreme Court has believed and said that its job is to protect vulnerable minorities against the tyranny of the majority that would want to limit their rights. It's always found a way to expand rights since then. Sometimes those were rights that liberals liked. Sometimes those were rights that conservatives liked, like free speech rights for corporations or religious liberty rights for corporations or for individuals. But it's always expanded. In the Dobbs case, the Supreme Court reversed course and it took away a well-established fundamental right to control women's bodies that had existed for the previous half century. In doing that, it undermined the legitimacy of the purpose of the Supreme Court, what it's for, what its job is. And historians are going to look at that and they're going to say, this is a moment when the court lost a tremendous amount of public support, when it lost the capacity to appear to be an even-handed body that sometimes did things for conservatives and sometimes did things for liberals. And they're going to say that originalism, or the theory of originalism, played a huge role in that misstep that the Supreme Court took. And that is going to be very costly for the court. It's going to be costly for people's rights. And in the long run, I believe it's going to be very costly for our country.
Noah Feldman is law professor at Harvard. Professor, thanks so much for the time.
It's my great pleasure.